Hi, this is John, and I'm here to introduce the first episode of Brit Socks and Nerds for the 2018 season, which is an exclusive interview with Jen McCaffrey, the new Boston Red Sox correspondent for The Athletic in Boston. Just a quick warning that there are a couple of disturbances on the line during the call, a couple of dropouts, but hopefully that shouldn't disturb what is an excellent interview with the brilliant Jen, who if you aren't already following on Twitter, you should go away and do that right now. It's well worth waiting to the end, even if you're not a Red Sox fan, because Jen gives some excellent tips for those of us who are visiting Boston and visiting Fenway and looking to get the best experience out of the park and the surrounding area. So stay till the end and get those. Hello and welcome to Brit Sox and Nerds, the still dreadfully named Red Sox podcast with a British twist. I'm your host, John McGee. I'm sad to say that my partner in crime and the author of that desperate moniker, Mr. Tom Pringle, is again off defending the country. But in his defence, he has helped arrange our first guest for the 2018 season. That's The Athletic Boston's newly minted Red Sox correspondent, the brilliant Jen McCaffrey. Jen, thanks for joining me this evening, or afternoon your time, live from Fenway Park.
Thanks for having me, appreciate it.
No problem. So it's 2 days into official life at The Athletic. Does it feel any different to mass life?
Yeah, actually it does. I mean, The Athletic kind of has this focus of working on kind of longer pieces, kind of more in-depth analytical pieces. And so, you know, at Mass Live, we covered kind of every aspect of the team, from, you know, injury reports to lineup changes and everything down, you know, you name it, big plays and things like that. The Athletic is kind of focused on longer, more in-depth pieces and kind of leaving Twitter to kind of, you know, being the place where you update all the kind of short minor things. So yeah, it's been cool so far. Gotten a couple pieces up. Did a sit down with Dave Dombrowski, the president of baseball operations here, a couple days ago, and I'm getting off to a 9-1 start, which has been a rarity for teams over the past 20, 30 years since the 162 game season started. So yeah, there's been an opportunity to do a little bit more, which is cool, and obviously there'll be a lot more to come. So
great. I was gonna ask you about that. You've already preempted it. So we'll turn this next little section on its head, which was going to be to ask a little bit about your background and your route into sports writing. So what was that? Is it the traditional failed high school athlete route for you, or what direction did you come to sports journalism from?
Sort of. You know, I never really was a good athlete to begin with. I played softball from about like age 5 to 18, but I was pretty terrible at it. I was always better at writing. Writing and reading was my kind of my big thing, and I always kind of for writing and reading and got into sports probably around like, I don't know, age 10 or 12 when, you know, I started watching games with my dad and grandpa, Red Sox games. I grew up only about an hour south of Boston. So grew up watching games and I don't know, the combination of writing and watching the games. I was reading the newspaper every day, the Boston Globe and the Providence Journal, which was, kind of close to my, what we would get at home, close to my home. And just kind of fell in love with it that way and thought in high school, I ended up being a, editor for our school newspaper in high school. And then went to Syracuse University for journalism, for newspaper journalism, and kind of took off from there.
And was it always the plan for you to get back to New England and write about the Red Sox?
Yeah, so from Syracuse, my first high school sports for a local paper, I ended up moving to Philadelphia for a couple months, doing just sort of some like web producing for their sports site. But then I ended up getting a full-time job at the Cape Cod Times out in Massachusetts. And that was mostly high school sports, football, soccer, baseball, And the Cape Cod League, which had a lot of the top prospects in college baseball, would come there over the summer. So that was a good experience, and that kind of led into my job at Mass Live. So I was at Cape Cod for about 3 years. That led into my job at Mass Live, covering the Red Sox, and I was helping out with the other Boston teams in the Patriots and Bruins and Celtics. And I was at Mass Live for about 4 years, mainly covering the Red Sox, and then that's kind of the path that I took to get here.
When we were trying to set up a time and a date to have this conversation, you mentioned that during your time at Syracuse, you actually spent some time studying in London, I believe. Whereabouts was that?
Yeah, right in central London. Syracuse has, I think it's, well, at the time it was 7 satellite campuses across the world, in France and in China and in the South America. One of them was in London. So it was right kind of near Russell Square, which was where the building was. But I lived with 7 other girls in a so we were right near the Edgware tube stop, and not too far from Hyde Park. So I would kind of run down to Hyde Park and do a loop around and run back. And yeah, it was a tremendous experience. We were there. I was there in the spring of 2009. So that was actually when Barack Obama had just been elected president. So it was a kind of a big world change, I guess, if you will. And I one of the things I do remember is a lot of Londoners were just kind of curious, and Americans thought about having Obama in office, and you know, it was so new, we weren't really too sure, but we were optimistic, and obviously and now we're less optimistic, but but we could leave that for another conversation.
yeah maybe that's one to have offline. I lived in London for 8 years, and I was optimistic for all that time too. I left London about the same time that things maybe got less optimistic. But again, let's park that. talking about London, obviously, one of the big stories so far of the MLB season off the field has been not announcement quite yet, but speculation and pretty strong reports linking the Red Sox and the Yankees with playing a series over in London in June next year. What have you picked up on that from the Red Sox side of things? From all accounts that I've read, it seems to be relatively positive about the possibility if keeping guarded about the actuality of things.
Sure. Yeah, I think that the Red Sox are would very much like to pursue it. Just from a financial and kind of growing the game side, they seem to kind of always be into that kind of aspect of things, and just kind of finding more fans globally, scouting obviously globally. So I think right now it's kind of up to Major League Baseball and kind of figuring out the logistics. Obviously the travel schedule will be a little difficult, and just sort of, working out all those different things that can kind of, that might inhibit it. So I think that they won't, anything, just so they have everything kind of lined up in place.
Sure. Well, that sounds pretty positive from that side of things, and for you too, I guess, as an ex-Londoner, we're going to allow you to have that title. You must be pretty excited about the possibility of coming back.
I would. I haven't been back. It'll be about 10 years. I've been trying to get back, and one thing after another will crop up. And I'm dying to get back to London. So if they do, work out this series, I will absolutely be there. I'll work my hardest to make sure I'm there.
I'm sure that now that you're with The Athletic and the focus on long form journalism and storytelling, that this is going to be one of the stories of the 2019 Red Sox stories, if it does come about, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it'll be definitely, like I was saying, with the MLB's, played games in what, Cuba and in Puerto Rico and in Mexico, I think, even, but nothing, and obviously Tokyo, that was different for the Red Sox. We can kind of compare it to that maybe, just as like a longer trip. That was obviously much longer. That was back in the beginning of the 08 season. This will be definitely a storyline, and kind of just figuring out, just you know, who to play and kind of how to work around that. And you know, just, yeah, the travel schedule and obviously the off days before and after and how they'll kind of work that into to make sure everything obviously fits into the CBA and make sure, you know, the players get, you know, what the days off they're supposed to as well.
Great. So transitioning from the future to the present, or at least the near future, you mentioned at the top of the interview that you've been doing some digging into this unprecedented start for the franchise. It's 9-1 as we speak, topped by that 14-1 demolition of the Yankees last night. From your perspective, what's changed? What's different? I know there's a few things, and you can take that in any direction you like.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest changes, the team itself hasn't changed a lot aside from the addition of JD Martinez, and he's kind of been off to a quiet start, so you can't even really point to that. So the biggest difference really has been Alex Cora. You know, I think it's just, you know, when you bring in new leadership, I think it kind of revitalizes things a little bit. We saw that when, you know, John Farrell came in 2013 and he, you know, the team won the World Series that year. It just kind of adds a different, you know, flavor. And not that, you know, Farrell was a bad manager, but he just kind of lost the feeling in the clubhouse, I guess, a little bit, maybe lost the communication a little bit. And that obviously resonated with a lot of guys, and it's kind of having a young guy like Cora coming in, he can relate to a lot of the young players, but he can also relate to the older players because he played with some of them, like Dustin Pedroia. So I think that's gone a long way for a lot of guys. And the other thing is, you know, he was bench coach for the Houston Astros last year, and you can say it's been only one, he was there only 1 year, but, you know, he seems to have picked up a lot from AJ Hinch, the manager there, of just, you know, just seeing the game a little differently. I think one of the Mookie Betts had the 4-for-4 night last, you know, against the Yankees in the first game and in that 14-1 game. And he to kind of pull him aside in the offseason and tell him what he saw from the Houston side as sort of as a almost a scouting report on Mookie Betts from the opposition of, you know, swing at more pitches early in the count. And that's kind of worked for Betts so far. So I think a combination of all that, but really I think it has kind of just come down to a looser clubhouse that's, you know, playing under a new guy. And obviously, you know, the first 9 games or so were against Miami and Tampa. But they beat up on the Yankees in the first game, so that's obviously stronger competition than the first 2 teams. So we'll see where it goes, but obviously you'd rather be 9-1 than 1-9.
Yeah, definitely. There's a couple of specific players who've had an interesting start to the season who I wanted to ask you about. The first is Xander Bogaerts, who's obviously now on the DL after that freak injury throwing the ball into the dugout over the weekend. But he looks like a very different player to the one that we saw certainly in the second half of last year, if not earlier on. That, again, looks like it might be down to Cora and his hitting coach, Tim Hyers, who may have tapped into a bit of a change at the plate for Xander. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Hyers talked about meeting with Bogaerts in the off season and sort of just helping him fix just the swing and the way that he kind of lands his foot when he kind of goes into that swing. And Bogaerts really worked on that, you know, pretty much all off season. And it was something that, you know, I think he knew he was doing wrong, but he couldn't really figure it out on his own. And so, you know, he worked with Hyers. Xander works out in Arizona, down sort of near Phoenix, Arizona, and was there at a complex all winter, kind of trying to get this get his rhythm back. You know, last case, I guess in July, early July. And that kind of messed things up for him for the rest of the year. You know, you could see that he wasn't able to grip the bat as well, and that kind of, you know, messed up the swing, and then that kind of messed everything else up. So he kind of got out of some good habits that he might have had, you know, kind of working this off season to bring, you know, to adjust to make adjustments and kind of work on that has been huge for him, you know, so far.
Yeah, and the other player who's had a bit of a turnaround to start the season, if not at the back end of last season perhaps, is David Price. Is there anything that you've noticed specifically with him that's changed, either in his approach on the mound or around the clubhouse? He seems not only to have a better grasp of what he's doing on the field, but also to sort of loosened up himself somewhat from this distance. Is that something that you've seen yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's more the latter than the former. I don't think he's doing too much differently on the mound. I think, you know, coming out of the bullpen like he did at the end of last year, he was as good as we've seen him. And in the first couple starts that he's had here this season, he's been kind of carried that right over. So I think the biggest difference, really, even, you know, the first time we saw him in spring training, is just he's much more relaxed. I think he took the off season and kind of sat down and kind of put things in perspective. And he admitted when we talked to him in spring training and in early mid-February that he didn't handle things well last year, whether it was, you know, the injury, but also just kind of the confrontation he had with the team broadcaster, Dennis Eckersley, and kind of a mm-hmm. bunch of different things that kind of, you know, it kind of all mounted, and maybe there, you know, his wife had a baby last year. So that kind of add that into the mix, and you kind of have to also think about these guys, you know, as being regular human beings with, you know, everyday people issues. Mm-hmm. So having a newborn in the mix, I'm sure didn't alleviate any pressure when he wasn't performing well. So he just seems a lot more relaxed this year. And again, it's very early in the season, you know, but the confident, he's a guy that kind of thrives off confidence, and I, you know, like a lot of guys, but I feel like he does more so. And just not putting too much pressure on himself, I feel like, has kind of gone a long way. And just helping him relax on the mound, which has helped him, you know, focus on dominating, you know, hitters.
Not to end the conversation on the Red Sox on too sour a note, but is there anything that you think is a concern, either at this point or in the future, in terms of ensuring that this team maintains its level of performance? I mean, the bullpen's something that's had some consternation, probably because of what happened on the opening day. Jackie Bradley's maybe had a bit of a scuffling start. Are those two perennials still the same things that you think are going to be the ones that are going to be the focus over the next couple of months?
Yeah, I think finding consistency in the bullpen, you know, Tyler Thornburg's still kind of working his way back, and kind of what role will he kind of be able to take, or how, you know, how much will he be able to pitch when he comes back, and kind of how that looks. The bullpen, yeah, I think running into outs has kind of been a big issue.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of been, you know, carried over from last year a little bit, not so much in the past few games, but you know, that's kind of something that they want to be aggressive on the base paths, but at the same time maybe make smarter decisions. And just, yeah, Xander's, you know, where Xander stands on the DL, see if that gets, you know, resolved quickly like they're saying it will, or if this is something that's going to linger. That's kind of, you know, something that they'll want to keep an eye on. And then Pedroia, you know, Dustin Pedroia's, you know, still working his way back from the knee injury. How's he going to be able to, you know, perform when he does come back, and what's he going to look like, and when even might that be? So, you know, I think there's a, you know, they're off to a tremendous start. There are some things that are definitely you still want to keep an eye on. You don't want to lose sight of, because as soon as you do, you know, they'll rear their heads as major issues if you don't address them, you know, now. So I think those are just some things that they'll be keeping an eye on.
Great. So the last question I'm going to ask you, which I think is one that we're going to ask every guest this year, is to give a tip for a Boston visitor. What to eat, where to get coffee, where to sit at Fenway. I must say that this is probably for my own personal benefit, because I am visiting in June, but, you know, people will listen to this and they'll get the tips too. So is there anything from you, Jen, as a resident of the Boston area, that you would say is a can't miss?
Let's see. Well, at the park itself, you know, if you're taking, you probably will end up taking a tour of the park, but I would say even just during a game, even if you don't have seats up there, just walk up to the Green Monster, and sort of, view the game from that perspective. It's a really unique view. You know, not, you know, you can't really get that view anywhere else in baseball. And, it's obviously, you know, going to be different during a tour of the park when no one's playing versus during a game. So that would be one thing. There are a lot of good, the area around the park, the park itself, you know, was built in 1912, obviously. So the city kind of grew around it. So there's a lot kind of going on around the park compared to a lot of other, stadiums and parks across the country, because, those were built later and kind of set farther off into the city. Fenway's kind of like right in the heart of things. So there's a ton of bars and restaurants around here. Citizens Oyster House, Yard House, there's there's really anything that you can get. Laid back bars, you can get, you can go to like kind of the more fan crazy bars, Game On and Cask and Flagon, and those are pretty hearty bars before the game starts down on Lansdowne. I'm trying to think of, there's a bunch of new cafes that just opened up around here too. I mean, obviously there's Starbucks, and we even have some Cafe Nero's that have just cropped up, which I remember from my time in London. Yeah, when those first started coming here to Boston maybe about a year ago, I got nostalgic. So, there's a Tate Bakery, which is extremely, which is really good. So, everything. Tasty Burger is a kind of a local burger joint across the street. That's something that people always check out when they're around here. So there's a lot kind of going on. It's a unique atmosphere compared to a lot of the other parks in the country, just because it's so old and it's been here for so long and stuff has just kind of been built around it.
That sounds absolutely great. I'm going to have to make a list of those when I do the edit. I'll get my notepad out and write them all down. So, Jen, thanks very much for your time. I know you have to dash off and do some real work ahead of this evening's game. But before I let you go, is there anything that you want to mention that's coming up from you on The Athletic that's worth us keeping an eye out for in the next week or so?
Let's see. Well, next week, I'll be traveling to LA for Anaheim series, and then to Oakland. So I'm sure I'll be checking out or doing something, on Ohtani and kind of how that's has affected baseball in general. Other than that, just I think just kind of carrying on with the day-to-dayness, and don't have anything major planned just yet, but I'll keep you guys posted on Twitter, so if anything does come up.
Great, thanks very much, Jen.
Hey, thanks so much, appreciate it.
Don't detain you. I'll post this up on Twitter probably later on this evening, and I'll tag you in and all that.
Awesome, well thanks so much, I really appreciate it. This is fun.